diga bien.
I don't have any regrets, neither moi nor Edith Piaf. I'm Maggie Dawn. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by Anya Esther in the booth. Thanks for being here. We got some fun tunes for you today. Because y'all, I pulled an audible. I know I was going to talk about speech on campus. I'm saving it for next week. I decided that's a deep dive. That's a deep cut right there. And I had best have my energy tanks at full before we dive in. So I'll be working that in next week. But I wanted to start today's show with some interesting things that have happened at the Supreme Court over the last 3 to 4 days. You know, we spent last week talking about the Supreme Court shadow docket and the pressure that I think the public ought to bring to bear in a more direct way on the Supreme Court, it being so far out of line with the vast majority of Americans' viewpoints on the vast majority of issues of our day, as well as the fact that Congress should legislate, not just their ethics, of course, which serves us all, to ensure that the top judges in the land aren't riddled with conflicts of interest. Not just legislate their ethics, but also what they can issue emergency orders regarding, the process for doing so, perhaps compel them to actually reveal how they voted on those emergency requests that come through their shadow docket. And interestingly, this week, 3 decisions from the Supreme Court, some on the certiorari requests, one from the shadow docket, but 3 decisions this week seem to give me a light of hope. And, you know, there seems to be also, and I'm going to use what happened this week as an example of this, that on certain issues, I think the Supreme Court's kind of showing that it's aware it's in like deep doo-doo with the American public, and they're trying to kind of throttle back a little bit. Now, that's not all of them. You always have like Clarence Thomas is off, you know, burning the whole thing down. but led by Roberts, the Chief Justice, there's some indications that maybe the public's overall dissatisfaction, the literal tanking of the Supreme Court's approval rating by any poll measure, is perhaps having a small, tiny, modulating impact on how far right the court is falling. The first was a denial of a writ of certiorari. And remember last week we talked about that. That's just fancy legal Latin terms for please hear our case, court. And they vote to decide first whether or not they'll hear a case. And the court turned down this week. They denied cert. Just, I believe, on Monday, the 11th. They denied review of the state of Washington's state law that bans conversion therapy for minors. That was a wee bit of a surprise for some Supreme Court watchers. If you're not familiar with the term conversion therapy, it's basically like pseudo-psychotherapy done by non-licensed, not really psychotherapists, not medical doctors, no one that's actually subject to any licensure or regulation. Basically, counseling kids out of being gay, trans, bi, what have you. And it's usually done at some religious summer camp that amounts to nothing but brainwashing and torture. It's led kids to kill themselves. It has no sanction in any sort of peer-reviewed or scientific medical journals. It has no basis in reality, no grounding here on planet Earth that it's work, that it works, A, and that it's not wreaking active harms, serious psychological and sometimes physical harms on the kids that are without their consent subjected to this torture by their parents who are too ashamed to have a kid that's LGBTQIA+. And here's what, doesn't every kid deserve to be safe and loved? Conversion therapy doesn't meet that bar by any stretch. And so the state of Washington banned it. Of course, the Alliance Defending Freedom, the fringe right-wing advocacy agency, took up the cause of someone who wanted to constitutionally fight the conversion therapy ban. By the way, the ADF is, of course, where Speaker Mike Johnson used to work. You know, the guy that wants 18th century values, believes in creationism. Anyways, it was a 6-3 decision to deny cert. Of course, you had Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Brett Kavanaugh on voting on the side that would have reviewed the case. A bit surprising that that cohort does not include uber Catholic Amy Coney Barrett. So that was actually, you know, head faint in the right direction. Now, some of this, Thomas thinks that a conversion therapy ban is violative of the First Amendment guarantee that the state shall not inhibit free speech. That may be true if the ban was direct, but that's not how these work. They actually are typically come through the medical licensing schemes within states. And indeed, we restrict what doctors say every day through their licensure and their medical practice standards boards. We restrict what lawyers say every day. I can't go out and give a press conference that blows my client up or betrays their confidences that they've vested in me. So we limit this kind of speech all the time. Anyway, so that was case one. Little glimmer of hope there. Who knew? Glimmer of hope two. And we will be talking about the Chevron doctrine and how the court is really drawing into question the reliance by the judiciary on the expertise and the experts that work at agencies, at regulatory agencies, and in government writ large. And you will recall that this crazy judge in there was literally a one-judge town, a one-horse town in Texas, who had been rabidly anti-choice, anti-equity, anti-equality for his whole life, dropped a ruling on Good Friday of this year, pulling a drug that had been used by women to enjoy the same rights of bodily autonomy that men enjoy in this country. Yeah, on Good Friday was like, oh yeah, let's pull mifepristone off the market. And that went up through the most arch-conservative circuit court. Surprisingly, the Fifth Circuit did not put mifepristone back on the market, but the Supreme Court did. We actually talked about that during the shows on the shadow docket. So SCOTUS actually voted this week to take up the appeal from the Fifth Circuit, effectively saying that the FDA abused its authority and was unreasonable when it approved mifepristone. That drug's been on the market for 23 years. It is more safe than ibuprofen on a statistical basis. And yet, but I do want to say that most Supreme Court watchers, including myself, put the mifepristone case in the likely to be reversed column. In other words, what I think is that the Supreme Court will find that this far-right judge, Matthew Kaczmarek, and the far-right Fifth Circuit were wrong in concluding that the FDA abused its discretion and actually return mifepristone to the marketplace. That's what I think is going to happen. So a little glimmer of hope there. Had they denied the case, it would have left the Fifth Circuit decision in place and we would have no mifepristone. That would be bad. And then today, my friends, this coming up through the shadow docket, the Supreme Court let the state of Illinois' assault weapon ban go into effect. They surprised me there. I did not think that that was going to be how the Supreme Court dealt with that emergency appeal. The court in the recent last 20 years has been very, very pro-gun. And again, some Supreme Court watchers seem to think that the court is warming up to the idea that We are all entitled to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And that the right to carry around, you know, a weapon of war that the military uses isn't really what the musketeers back from the Second Amendment days had in mind. So, you know, a little bit of hope here. Excellent. We shall see what happens. Interesting little technical note. Not a single justice noted their dissent in allowing, in refusing to effectively ban enforcement of Illinois' assault weapons ban. So that's interesting. But don't you worry, we're going to talk about the impeachment stuff. We're going to have an investigation about whether or not we should investigate a thing that we're not sure we're investigating, about a thing that may or may not have happened that no one has any evidence about, though we've been looking for many months. So, yep, let's go spend some taxpayer dollars on that, my friend. Sounds like a really good and efficient way for Congress to spend their time. Unfortunately, many of them went on the record. Oh, yay, about 4 years now passed about their views on impeachments. Funny when your words come back to bite you in the behind, isn't it? Oof. We're going to start there when we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I got some sound for you on this impeachment stuff. It's wild. You really cannot make it up. I'm also going to talk about the fact that Jack Smith is do not pass go. Go directly to the Supreme Court with Trump's claim that he is indeed a king who can do no wrong. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Get on the horn. Join me. It's my last day this week. 844-967-2789. Open for calls or texts. Non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Yeah, folks, there's some crazy stuff going on. Oi! Trump's a self-appointed king entitled to absolute immunity, so says he. So let it be written, so let it be done. It's bananas! For all the Republicans out there that are like, yes, let's do the inquiry about the thing that might have happened but might not have, but we don't have any evidence. Just ask Chuck Grassley. Don't worry. I will get there. Joe Biden's like, yeah, man, I'm president. I can do whatever. What would your response to that be? It just doesn't track. Silliness. Anyways. Jack Smith, because Donald Trump is appealing Judge Chutkan's ruling that no, he is indeed not a king. Exact language in the ruling, which I can't do any better than, was, presidents are not kings, Judge Chutkan wrote, and plaintiff is not president. He appealed that ruling in the January 6th criminal case proceeding in the D.C. trial court. And Jack Smith, again, do not pass go, go directly to Boardwalk, said, let's not bother with the federal appeals court. Let's just go right to the Supreme Court. That is an extraordinary request. I can't remember the last time that happened in a matter that was this notable, this nationally important, if you will. So just quite incredible. It's just the moment that we're in at times. I mean, if you would take some of the things that are being said you know, out of the sort of silliness of today's time and look at them, everybody would be like, what? And I think sometimes that perspective is really important. I'm going to observe an anniversary that we just passed here as a nation a little bit later this hour. Bush v. Gore, remember that? Al Gore got more votes in the popular vote count in that election. And he didn't stage an insurrection. So again, I no matter which side of the bread you butter it on, I challenge you, take some of the things that are happening and apply them to the other party or attribute them to President Biden. And just ask yourself, let me suss this one out. Let me think this one through. Would the outcome, would I feel the same way about this? Were the proverbial shoe be on the other foot? And I think the answer to that is clearly no. And here's what I think we all should be a little bit concerned about: these cases not being seen to their conclusion before the election. Because again, just do it in the inverse. Don't you think the American public deserves to hear the evidence against former President Trump? That's the point of trials. That's why what Rudy Giuliani says outside of the courtroom is frequently a bald-faced lie that his lawyers don't want him to say. He's crazy, right? So Jack Smith, not messing around. I'm going to call your bluff. Let's go right to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ordered briefing really quickly. They issued an order telling Mr. Trump's legal team to provide their briefs by December 20th. That is like lightning fast before the Supreme Court. So I think we're going to get a decision from the Supreme Court stacked with justices Mr. Trump appointed. And I think we're going to get it well in time for the evidence to be presented to the citizenry of the United States, as well as the jury that will hear Mr. Trump's January 6th criminal trial. Let's go to the phones. Joanne from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome.
Hi, great show. I have a riddle, though. If Biden is so beatable and he's such a horrible candidate because he's so whatever, you know, old or whatever, why is the Republican Party spending so much time and effort trying to knock him down? I mean,
yeah, why impeach him?
Love to have a candidate. Love to have a candidate like that to run against.
Yeah, just leave him there.
Yeah. So I'm guessing maybe the Republicans just have nothing else to do, because as you might have seen on Rachel Maddow's show, 22 bills were enacted in these last this last session, whereas that's about the 21 bills were enacted in Hoover's failing session.
Yeah, when they didn't have the email, right? it's crazy. Couldn't agree with you more, Joanne. Similar contradiction. If he's so senile, how did he mastermind this huge familial cartel conspiracy thing? The two things are not both true. Let's listen to some sound on you, since we're going to talk impeachment. This is my favorite one. I'm just going to start with my favorite one. This is Republican Senator Chuck Grassley just saying the quiet part out loud, folks, Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon.
That his father was not financially involved in any way with his business. Do you accept that?
I'm going to take the same position I've taken since 2019, that all I can say is there's some indication of maybe some compromise with China particularly, but I have no evidence of it, and I'm going to just follow the facts where they are, and the facts haven't taken me to that point where I can say that the president's guilty of anything.
Thank you, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. Let's just play that on repeat, right? Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. Just, I have no evidence. There's been some allegations, and I know of no facts that the president has committed any crime. Now let's take a listen. This is a Democratic Representative Joe Neguse, This is Wednesday afternoon. He's in an exchange in the House Rules Committee, which recommended that they open an inquiry into the inquiry about the thing that might have happened that didn't, that no one has any evidence for. Yeah, that. Talking to Representative Rhenish Thaler, who's a Republican from Pennsylvania. The thing speaks for itself here, folks.
Maggie, which number is that?
I'm sorry, I guess we don't have that sound. This was, we'll find it during the break, but I can briefly summarize because, of course, I also have the Washington Post article discussing same. So don't worry, I come prepared. You know, double source the info. Here was the exchange. Representative Neguse asked Reschenthaler, what is the specific constitutional crime that you're investigating? Reschenthaler responded, well, we're having an inquiry so we can do an investigation to compel the production of witnesses and documents. Again, I've been saying it because it sounds so stupid, but yeah, it's an inquiry about maybe some evidence about maybe a thing that isn't a thing. So then Neguse says, and what is the crime you're investigating? Reschenthaler, high crimes, misdemeanors, and bribery. But what high crime and misdemeanor are you investigating? He says, this is Reschenthaler in response, once I get time, I will explain what we're looking at. Well, that would be the time, sir. Right then in the House Rules Committee when you're deciding whether or not you should have an inquiry about an investigation, about a thing, maybe. Wait. You're locked, everybody. I'll be back. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. You're listening.
Don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. And don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to say. And please, when I go out with you, don't put me on display. You don't own me.
Nobody tells me what to say, and I'm on the radio, so I'm clearly not on display. Yikes. But my name is Maggie Dawn. She is Anya Esther. We are the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take us everywhere you need to go crystal clear this holiday season. Download the Civic Media app from your favorite app store. It costs nothing, but your family doesn't have to know that. Make it a little art project. Stick it in a little gift bag. I bought you the app. Get wise, friend. We've got all kinds of wonderful sports coverage. Tomorrow, you can listen to, not tomorrow, this evening, you can listen to the Badgers playing Jacksonville State on a bunch of our radio networks. Check it out. Get the app. Packers, Badgers, and the Bucks. I'm going to give you my two cents on what went down yesterday at the Pacers-Bucks game in the last segment. We're going to also talk to Civic Media's very own Terry Barr, who's going to tell us what has been local but overlooked this week in Wisconsin news. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss that. But I got to get back to the ridiculousness. During the break, we were able to find the clip that I was so fondly speaking of. So let's just listen here. This is Democratic Representative Joe Neguse from Colorado's 2nd talking to Representative Reschenthaler from Pennsylvania, Republican in the House Rules Committee on Tuesday afternoon.
To the core, I think the question I'm asking you is,
what
is the specific constitutional crime that you're investigating?
Well, we're having an inquiry. So we can do an investigation and compel the production of witnesses.
And what is the crime you're investigating?
And documents. High crimes, misdemeanors, and bribery.
What high crime and misdemeanor are you investigating?
Look, I will, once I get time, I will explain what we're looking at and I will make the equivalency.
No, I'm just asking you for
the last impeachment.
What I'm trying to say, Mr. Reschenthaler, and again, I say this because I served as a prosecutor during the last impeachment of former President Trump. There was a specific high crime that he was impeached for on a bipartisan basis. 13 Republicans agreed. During in 2019, when President Trump was impeached, there were two very specific offenses that he was impeached for. And I can't get an answer. I don't think members of the Oversight Committee could get an answer, or the Ways and Means Committee, or the Judiciary Committee. I don't think there is an answer. There's not. And of course, it's unsurprising because, according to even Fox News correspondents, House Republicans have been unable to make any kind of connection to a constitutional high crime and misdemeanor and President Biden. So I would say this, to make the argument that there is some similarity between, and I don't know if this is what you're suggesting, I hope it's not, between the various facts that you've focused and zeroed in on with respect to President Biden and President Trump's conduct on January 6th. It's very clear to me the American people would reject that argument outright.
Yeah. So we're having an inquiry about an investigation about maybe some evidence about maybe a thing, but I don't know what the thing is, so I can't tell you what, yeah. Oops. It's this silly. They're smoking guns. Hunter Biden wrote him a check for $7,000. Ooh. His dad gave him a loan for a truck. He loaned his sister-in-law $40,000. The big scary number here, everybody, $250,000. I love it when they talk about it's $250,000. Doesn't it sound much more scary? It's $250,000. Wait a minute, it's not even $1 million. It's just $250,000, $250,000. They were basically loans that he made to his family. Well, if that's a crime, every privileged white kid I know, whoops, it's stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. We should just have a general distaste for stupid, right? And a waste of taxpayer dollars. I hear it from my conservative, you're wasting taxpayer dollars. This is a waste of taxpayer dollars. Basically, there are claims that then Vice President Biden pressured then Ukraine's former top prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, to stop investigating his son, Hunter Biden, and his business associates in Burisma. None of that actually is true. First of all, Viktor Shokin was known in the entire international community as one of the most corrupt, if not the most corrupt, prosecutor in Ukraine. That's why folks didn't want him there, because he was corrupt. This is what, like, Alexander Vindman testified about. Remember this? He, like, heard the phone call where Trump was trying to actually then get Ukraine to investigate Biden to help him in the election, that whole thing. And in that same congressional hearing, in the same first impeachment, we heard from a slew of State Department officials that testified under oath that Viktor Shokin was corrupt to the core. And that when the current Ukrainian president came into office, there was an international multilateral push to help Ukraine purge their judicial system and their criminal prosecutors' offices of these corrupt officials. And by the way, Devin Archer, who's testified and Republicans were like all a flutter, he apparently was one of Hunter Biden's business associates in Burisma, testified that they thought Shokin was actually helpful to Burisma. So wait a minute. None of it tracks. Now, listen, I'm not going to say that it's not unseemly and a terrible thing that Hunter Biden was involved in Burisma and clearly trading on his father's name. It shouldn't happen. We should have more robust laws in this country that prevent that from happening. And they should apply equally to every president, ex-president, ex-vice president, want to be president. Like right now, you know, we should have laws that prevent that from happening so that maybe, you know, a former ex-president's son-in-law isn't getting paid $25 million a year by Saudi Arabia. And then Mohammed bin Salman goes on Sean Hannity's show and says, yeah, if Trump wins, I'm not going to stop paying Jared Kushner $25 million a year. I'm just going to keep doing that. But that's okay. $25,250,000. All right. I'm not going to do the math on the radio, but those are like multi-factors of 10. Mark from Prairie du Sac, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome. How are you, friend?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. You know, it what's disturbing to me is that the Supreme Court actually, you know, hopefully they won't ignore, you know, what's actually in the Constitution or the notes to the Constitution, which I consider the Federalist Papers, where in Federalist 44, Madison points out that the Congress didn't enumerate everything in the Constitution. Congress may be called upon to do to promote, for example, the general welfare or the defense of this country. Everything wasn't specifically enumerated in there to, you know, the Congress might be called upon to do. And Congress has set up these agencies, you know, for the executive to use to promote health and safety of the people of this country. What I would point out to the Supreme Court, however, is that there's nothing in the Constitution that are directly enumerated that gives them the power to rule on the constitutionality of laws. As Hamilton pointed out, I think and believe it was in 81, which says there's not one syllable in the Constitution that directly gives the Supreme Court that power. I mean, he kind of suggested, well, you know, maybe we should have it in there, but it ain't in there. And that why it is, I don't know if I should be disturbed. I'm not going to make any, you know, claims of false modesty here, that I'm relatively intelligent here, but I could actually, you know, that it is both encouraging and discouraging that a common citizen such as myself could actually credibly argue before the Supreme Court and make at least one, two, or three of them look like fools in the arguments I would give.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. We're talking about Marbury versus Madison there, right? Like the court interpreted its own power and went like, oh, yes, we can overrule laws. But they needed a case to actually do that because it's not stated expressly in the Constitution for all you textualists out there. I think we need some more sound about this whole impeachment nonsense. What do you think, Anya? Probably.
I mean, we've got enough of it.
Yeah, let's do it. This is Representative Comer. This is the guy that goes on Fox and OAN and Newsmax and talks about the smoking gun, but doesn't actually have one all the time. And then Steve Doocy, who's not really... Listen, Steve's a lovely guy. I've been on Fox and Friends. Did one national news hit. Yes, Anya's looking at me like, what?
I feel like I just got hit by a bus. Oh my gosh. You had other producers before me?
Yeah. No, that's when you do like the remote link from the local place.
Oh.
We should go find that sound. Next week, our holiday special will be me on Fox and Friends, the national hit, news hit. I will play you what happened there because it's very vintage Maggie Dawn. It's like a deep cut. And it's my origin story for the radio. It's how I eventually ended up on the radio. But Steve Doocy, not really what I would call, you know, the president of Mensa. But even Steve Doocy took Representative Comer to the woodshed. You're going to listen to it right now.
Congressman, exit question for you. Have you found evidence that anybody broke any laws? You don't actually have any facts to that point. There's no evidence that Joe Biden did anything illegally. I heard you yesterday refer to them as a crime family, and this was organized crime. So make it easy for us. What was the crime?
Well, the crime is trading policy for money.
Which policy?
Well, we're going to get into that.
We don't know. We've been at this a while. I'll get back to you. Check the books. Oh, wait, that was Ron Johnson.
Why would Doocy say, if all the work you've done, that you have nothing? Why do you think that is?
Well, he's been this. He's had that position from the very beginning. I've quit going on Fox and Friends because of Ducey.
Oh, doesn't that sound just like Ron Johnson, too? Like, hey, wait a minute. That's not what this interview was supposed to be about. You're not supposed to ask me actual questions. So silly. But here's my favorite, everybody. This is Speaker Mike Johnson 4 years ago today. Here's cut three.
For removal based on a myriad. Members have called for removal based on a myriad of objections against this president. Representative Al Green of Texas filed a resolution in the House for impeachment after Trump called for players kneeling during the national anthem to be fired. I mean, come on. You don't like his political positions? Great. But you can't impeach a president because you don't like him. That's not how this system works. We're in a constitutional republic. There are rules here. There are standards.
Oh, you can't impeach. Hey, Mike, you can't impeach a president because you don't like him. It's that simple. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. When we come back, going to be joined by Civic Media's own Terry Barr to tell you two things that were local and overlooked in Wisconsin news this week. Join our conversation. 844-967-2789. Back with more in a moment.
You don't know me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't know me.
Que voy a pelear por él. Mi sueño es que voy a luchar. Yo te lo regalo, llévatelo lejos. Él es mala suerte y yo no lo quiero. Mi mayor venganza será que te quedes con él. Mi mayor venganza.
Everybody, if you don't know the lyrics to that song, Anya certainly does. So fantastic. I don't even think I'll fight you for him. Don't even dream I'd fight for him. He's my gift. Take him far away because he's bad luck and I don't love him. The best revenge will be when you stay with him. Oh, and it goes on. This is my favorite part of the lyrics here. You'll discover his secret, and like a suffering soul, you'll live to the end, mortally wounded by love while I laugh. My gift to you, my friends. Thank you, Anya.
Of course.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther, and we are joined now by Civic Media's very own Terry Barr. Welcome, Terry. How you doing?
Hello, how are you? Your music game is very strong tonight.
That is all Anya.
Thanks, Terry.
I just get to tell her how much I love it.
I do too. It's really fun to hear. And you know, it kind of goes into maybe a little bit about what's been local and overlooked in the last couple of days in Wisconsin. How about this, Maggie? Let's talk about property taxes. You know, we really don't discuss this enough. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum just put out a new report showing more than 4.5% increase from last year on your property tax bills. And of course, those should be arriving in your mailbox any day now. This increase, even despite the bipartisan deal to boost the shared revenue, and that of course is money that goes out from the state to local cities or villages, counties, and local leaders then can decide what they need to use the money for. What's getting the blame for this? Well, inflation and so many local efforts to raise property taxes to support education projects. Now, this 4.5 20%+ increase is the largest to happen since 2007. And yes, Wisconsin maintains its eighth highest for taxes, property taxes, out of all 50 states. I say ouch to that.
It's pretty incredible. And so I used to actually, I used to deal legally with property tax assessments quite frequently, and you could make a pretty solid argument that consumer goods inflation and inflation overall shouldn't really impact an individual year's property tax assessment. In other words, property tax assessments effectively should be using an economic algorithm that is smoothing property values over many years, because people don't buy a house for a year and then sell it in the vast majority of situations, right? It's not, that's not that kind of a marketplace. And so it's interesting to me that an explanation would be posited as like, oh, well, there's inflation. Yes, well, it will go down, and it is down, and it's only at like 3.5% right now, and it's on its way down. So that doesn't really carry a lot of water with me as an economist. Boy, they're going for the gusto, aren't they, Terry? What's your second local and overlooked story of the week?
This, I think, is very cool, and it comes out of a sad situation, but she is making the most of it. A local woman starting to deliver overdose aid kits to businesses all around the state. It is her hope as an effort to stop overdose deaths. Her name is Jessica Geschke. She's from Cottage Grove, and she witnessed a family member overdose on opioids. They had to call the police because she didn't know what to do. She didn't have any of the items she needed to be able to help this person. Sad story there. That person did recover, but she was so traumatized by it. She said, I need to stop these overdose deaths. So putting together these kits that have everything you need and how to use it. And she really wants business owners to put these right next to, say, your AED or your first aid kits. And state health officials did say 1,400 people died from overdoses in Wisconsin last year. If you want to get a little more information, she has a website started now, too. It's starthealingnow.org. And hats off to her for doing this.
How absolutely wonderful. That's Jessica Geschke of Cottage Grove giving to businesses so that they can give to members of the public, I assume, for zero cost. Basically,
exactly.
It's to avoid the overdoses, right?
Right, right. And, you know, it came again because she actually witnessed someone in her family overdosing. She didn't have any of the items she's putting in these kits, so she didn't know what to do, so they had to call the police. But she said, you know, so often it's so stigmatized, overdosing, and you know, it's hard when you do need the help. And she said, I don't want people to feel like they can't walk in somewhere and get some help. And
that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Terry. And hats off to Jessica of Cottage Grove. Just a little point of fact, here in Milwaukee County, many, many, many county facilities have free harm reduction vending machines. You can get gun locks for free. You can get Narcan for free. All sorts of health supporting, community supporting items also for free. And it ties in, Terry, perfectly. Thank you so much for being here. Ties in perfectly. The reason that I was on Fox and Friends is because in my capacity, in my day job, I sued the opioid manufacturers and distributors on behalf of Milwaukee County and all of its residents, citizens, taxpayers, and tourists back in 2018. That's how the harm reduction vending machines here in Milwaukee County got funded. And I went on Fox and Friends, and they tried to get me with one of their gotcha questions, but I got them back. We're going to find that audio and bring it to you next week here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Be safe out there, everybody. And man, if I was Giannis's brother, I would have come flying off the bench too when one of those mean Pacers body slammed him. Then they don't even give him the basketball where he scored the franchise record 64 points. What the heck's wrong with the Pacers, man? You're supposed to be Indiana nice. The GOAT, man. Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's been a great week of the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Terry Barr of the Civic Media Radio Network, and of course you, Anya. I love you. Everybody be safe out there. Happy Hanukkah, Festival of Lights.
Señor, venganza será.